This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, we have a special guest today. Please tell us who we'll be speaking with today.
Our guest today is Deborah McAlexander. At age 24, Deborah was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. She is totally blind in her left eye and has a tiny amount of central vision in her right eye. Rather than succumbing to adversity, Deborah redirected her energy by earning a Master's of Music degree in piano performance and becoming a professional pianist, a nationally recognized piano teacher, a motivational speaker, and an extremely focused equestrian. In 2019, at age 64, Deborah was introduced to the equestrian discipline of dressage and began competing. She's currently working to qualify for future Paralympic Games and World Equestrian Games, and she's training 7 days a week to make those dreams come true. Deborah is a member of Capital Toastmasters in Jefferson City, Missouri, and her story is the focus of a member profile in the September 2020 issue of The Toastmaster. Deborah McAlexander, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What a fascinating member profile. And we'll be talking about a number of your accomplishments and of course, the adversity that you've overcome. But Deborah, I'm really curious. 28 years, a professional pianist and educator. How do you make that transition to being an equestrian?
Excellent question. When I was 5 years old, my daddy bought me a dapple gray Shetland pony. So my love affair and passion for horses began when I was a small child, as did my love of music at that time also. Through high school, I had the privilege of being able to ride several different horses that my family owned. Then for many years, when I was going to school in violin performance, and later on in piano performance, I did not have the opportunities to ride horses at all. It wasn't until about 10, 12 years ago, during a time when my husband at the time was succumbing to Parkinson's disease and Lewy body dementia, I got back into horseback riding. And through that process of Jack's death, the thing that kept me alive, my spirits alive, and kept me from going down into a hole of deep, dark depression was my bond with horses. I was on a trail ride shortly after Jack died in 2017, and another rider asked me, "Deborah, have you ever thought about competing in the Paralympics?" And I said, "The Paralympics? I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of that." I did some research, and I found out that para dressage is the sport for equestrians during Paralympic Games. How hard could this be? I thought. Boy, I know how to walk, trot, and canter an American saddlebred horse. I competed. I just will have to learn a few patterns and it'll be just easy peasy fun. Boy, was I wrong. After I did my research, Lorene Johnson, the director for the United States USEF Para Equestrian Division, suggested that I come to North Texas Equestrian Center and train with Kai Hunt. I had my first lesson with him on March the 12th, 2019, and I've been here ever since. I do train 7 days a week. And I found out right from the get-go that I was totally a beginning dressage rider. While this was a very challenging situation because of my lofty goals of wanting to compete internationally for the United States, Kai said it was possible with lots and lots of hard work. So as a beginning dressage rider, I went to my first show with Cornette Noir a few weeks later, and guess what? We won 2 blue ribbons, 2 first places, 2 second places, and 1/3 place. And Kai said, "Whoa, this doesn't happen to most people. Most riders, it takes 3 or 4 years just for them to be able to get into the show arena." Mm. I was so thrilled by that, and that achievement happened quickly. Now, as I work to refine and learn and realize how difficult the movements are in dressage, I am humbled. I take each riding lesson and each show opportunity as a fabulous chance to continue my learning and my growing. I'm on a journey. I love what I'm doing, and I have a fabulous horse, fabulous trainers at North Texas Equestrian Center. That's my story of how I got here.
Lawson.
Wow.
I love the way the article opens. It opens with this recollection of when you first met Kai, and it sounds like he had first evaluated your skills. And there's this quote here from him. He says, "The good news is you're here to train. The bad news is you don't do anything right in dressage."
That was pretty much how I said it. Yes. And he was right. He was right.
I wonder how did that land with you? I mean, because you came here with fresh legs, with a twinkle in your eye, I imagine.
Yes.
It's probably funny now, but if it were me, I think I would have found that pretty deflating.
Yes. I think most people might have tucked tail and run back to Missouri, but I'm not most people. I have this incredible bond, which is hard to put into words, between the horse and me. I think that one of the things that spurs me onward is the freedom that I feel when I can be on a horse and ride. I joke about it, but I say, well, one of my biggest challenges is just to get to the horse. You know, I have to find somebody to drive me to the barn or get me to where the horse is. But it's that freedom of movement that I find when you're on a powerful horse. It's more than that. It's a communication with a living creature. I might start crying, but when you get it right, when you communicate correctly so that the horse understands what you're wanting it to do and how he's supposed to do it. You see, it's not just that we walk, trot, and canter and diddle around with that. No, in dressage, there are multiple types of walk, several types of a trot, several types of a canter that you have to learn to do, which takes lots of time and lots of training for the animals to learn how to do these movements, but also for the rider to learn how to communicate effectively with that horse. And the communication between the rider to the horse is done not vocally with words, but through hopefully imperceivable leg, seat, and body movements. This is challenging for me, especially as a person who sees only through a little straw of sight, but in a way it's a benefit because I've often told people one of my most effective weapons is blindness. I have to rely on what I feel from the horse. Now, this might seem easy to you listening to me, but I got to tell you something, it's not. For the longest time, I was a mere passenger on top of this horse. I did not feel, even though it sounds crazy, it's a very sensitive feel of every movement that that horse is doing. Where is his head? Where are his shoulders? Where is his rear end? How, keeping an even speed in what he's in his trot or his walk or his canter. I'm just now beginning to develop that feeling for the horse. And it is so totally incredible. And I will just say this, one of my instructors put on a blindfold that I had put a little bitty teeny hole in the right eye part for her to look through. The minute she put it on, before she even got on the horse, her comment was, "Mamma mia." When she got on the horse and rode and she got off, she says, "You know, I was nauseated." And as a matter of fact, at one of the shows a few months ago, there was an international para judge who judged my tests. And when I showed him, I said, "Please take your left hand, cover your left eye so you cannot see. Take your right hand, make a fist with a little bitty, bitty, like straw of sight that you could look through. Put that up to your right eye and look around." His immediate response was, "I would not ride."
Yeah.
I have a huge, huge challenge by not seeing, not having any peripheral vision, not having any depth perception, just seeing straight ahead. But what I'm learning is no excuses. I used to sometimes blame if I'd make a rider error on the fact, well, it's because of my vision. That's not true. Vision is an asset for me. The vision that I have and the lack of vision is not an excuse. So actually, as I'm learning to feel my horse better and trust the horse and he's trusting me, it's going to become one of my most powerful tools, my most powerful aids for becoming the most effective, efficient rider I can become. And I'm going to show the world what can happen when you believe that the impossible is possible, when you dare to dream a Mount Paralympics dream, when you work hard, when you work smart, when you ride to win. When for me, I ride by faith, not by sight. And the last thing would be, you just never quit. You don't always win. Sometimes you feel like you've been bucked, not literally, but you've been bucked off the horse and into this, just like everything went wrong. It was a horrible ride. Nothing was right. Oh my gosh, I'm not getting better. And you have to change your mindset. You have to adopt the mindset that you're going to conquer and not be conquered. That no matter what your adversity is, no matter what your trials are, your hardships, what you have to overcome, you will figure out a way to get through it, around it, over it, under it. You will not stop, and you will keep moving forward. That's what we do with the horse. The most important thing is we want to keep moving the horse forward and keep that horse round and feel what we're doing. Be soft, be smooth. And it sounds so easy, but it's the hardest riding discipline there is, bar none. But when you get it right, and when you see it done right, it is breathtaking.
So we've poked around the edges of it, but could you just really quickly give a sketch of what the sport of dressage entails?
Dressage is a highly developed equestrian sport, which requires precise movements by the horse. These are called tests, our classes that we do. And it's not just a horse show where a bunch of horses get in a show ring and all go around one way, walk, trot, and canter, turn around and go away, go around the other way, walk, trot, and canter. We have tests with precise movements that are done in a dressage arena, which is, for me, a 60 by 20 meter arena, which is surrounded by a little white fence, a low fence. Around this fence, there are different letters, and our movements are to be done at specific letters throughout this arena. The judge is giving us a score in points. And at the end of this test, there is a calculated percentage score, which is your grade for that test. We are not allowed to proceed to the next level or even the next test in a specific level until we, as best we can, master those skills. It's a very disciplined process of learning for the horse, but also for the rider.
Now, it's taken you a while to get to this point, and I'm just thinking, I would never have been able to do what you've done. In fact, as your friend said, I would probably not have been wanting to get on that horse and move more than a foot or two. I'm just curious, there was a time period where you could see. How did you adjust to losing your eyesight, or how did you adjust to being able to deal with the retinitis pigmentosa?
When I was 24 years old and the retina specialist told me, Deborah, you have retinitis pigmentosa. You will be totally blind and totally deaf by the age of 30. I felt like I had been handed a death sentence. At that time, I had never even been around a person who was blind. I thought blindness was something that a child maybe was born with, or it just happened to people when they got very, very old. But not when you're 24 years old, not when you're beautiful and you're smart and you've got full scholarship to the St. Louis Conservatory of Music and Violin Performance. But it happened to me. And so for several years, yep, I sat on the pity pot and I wandered around without any direction because I was terrified. And that is the greatest adversity that we all have to face. It's the fear of the unknown, the unexpected, and the unseen. I met my husband, Jack, out of the state of California. I'd gone out there with a girlfriend who was selling cars. This is funny. She had a job selling cars at one of the largest Ford stores in Southern California. I got a job selling cars. I was taking people on demo rides. I knew that I had no sight in my left eye, but I thought, oh, I see great. You know, I had this job. I met Jack. We got married. He took me to Jules Stein Eye Institute to meet with one of the top retina specialists in the world, who told me that he was re-diagnosing at that point my eye disease from retinitis pigmentosa to chorioretinitis, a non-contagious virus that had done its damage in my eyes, and that maybe I would see through this little straw of sight for the rest of my life. When I met with the surgeon who was going to do some eye muscle surgery on my left eye, he's doing his general questions, and he said, oh, and this patient no longer drives a car. Oh, yes, I do, I said. As a matter of fact, I have a little Fiat convertible Jack gave me. I put the top down. I'm driving all around Southern California. I have no trouble seeing. As a matter of fact, I've got a job selling cars and I take people on demo rides. And he said very sternly, Deborah, hasn't anybody told you you are legally blind? It's illegal for you to drive a car. And I'm like, really? Are you serious? Does this mean I have to give up my job selling cars? Which, yes, I did. What we did was we moved back to Jefferson City, Missouri. I became a client of Rehab Services for the Blind. And the first thing that this organization did was to send me to a school in Kansas City called Program for the Blind. For 5-6 months, I did all of my training with a blindfold on to teach me how to function as a totally blind person, if that ever happened in my life. So I learned white cane mobility. I learned grade one Braille. I learned the code for music Braille. I cooked, I cleaned, I sewed. I went all over Kansas City on the bus system with my blindfold on and my white cane. And when I got done with that school, my whole perception of myself and my image of blindness had changed, because at that school, I saw many people there who were the stereotypes of what, unfortunately, people think about, that a blind person is helpless and is hopeless and doesn't amount to much and just sits around at home and collects a blind pension, maybe. And unfortunately, yes, there are some people like that. But a lot of times it's because nobody's ever told them, you can achieve whatever you want. You're going to have to work hard. But you're going to have a plan and a path and a way to overcome the depression and the anxiety that you feel. And yes, when I was at that school, I had psychological counseling. I screamed and yelled and got totally upset several times, because it was like I couldn't believe I was at this school, that I belonged in a blind school. But when I left it, it was this. I thought, you know what? I'm going to quit feeling sorry for myself. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get a bachelor's and then a master's degree in piano performance, because I can make a living doing this, teaching piano, performing as a pianist. That's what I did. And I'm thankful to Missouri Rehab Services for the Blind for paying for my education to go back and earn that bachelor and master of music degree. And until just a few years ago, I also did continue to do psychological counseling to help me deal with blindness and just dealing with the everyday situations, so that I could be a triumphant person in my life, a victor instead of the victim. It's worked, because here I am.
That sounds great. Whereas some people would see what you developed with your eyesight as a crisis, you looked at it as an absolute opportunity. You obviously had to overcome some of your own misconceptions about blindness. What advice, what are some of the things that you might say to someone who feels that they feel like they're in a position where there's really no hope?
We each have obstacles and hurdles in our lives, and we have to decide how we're going to deal with these things. Every human being will be confronted with adversity, obstacles, and failures. It's not about what happens, it's about how we choose to handle them. Each of us, when something tragic or unexpected happens, has the choice to either succumb to the hardship and live life in a sinkhole of pain, despair, failure, or to make the choice to figure out what has to be done to learn the skills, develop the confidence, and find the courage to get up, get back on that horse that's bucked you off, and keep on riding. There are no easy answers. Unfortunately, some people make the choice to stay stuck in their trap of self-pity. Not me, not the greatest counselor in the world, the greatest psychologist, can help that person overcome the situation unless the individual is willing to just get up and try one day at a time. And maybe every day isn't a triumphant, oh, wow, you know, I overcame this problem. I'm moving forward. I'm moving ahead. But just one step at a time, just like with the horse, one step at a time, try to make each day and each moment that you're alive be a success and be positive. Positive attitude. Attitude is everything. And the other thing, too, is if we keep looking back on our life and what's happened, I pretty much can guarantee you will not move forward. because you'll be stuck in that trap of poor, pitiful me of what happened behind. You've got to be willing to just let that go, and you've got to be willing to move forward, keeping your eye on the top of that mountain and saying, no matter what it takes, I'm going to get there.
Very eloquently said. You were already an experienced public speaker when you joined Toastmasters. You, of course, have a background as an educator. In the article, you made reference to Toastmasters being a strong influence on you. How has Toastmasters helped you on your journey?
I Googled, what are people most afraid of? Guess what came up in several surveys? Public speaking. For me, with the music, I had always had the opportunities to get out and perform in front of people, to get up and announce my pieces. So since I was a child, I was not so afraid of standing up and speaking or acting in front of people. However, most people find it terrifying to stand up and do public speaking. So how Toastmasters has helped me, it's reinforced my speaking skills. But I think the thing that I love the best is the table topics. And usually I win those. Not always, but often I do. I love that because it gives us the opportunity to, on the spot, have to think about and put into a logical order an answer to a question. And the question might not be some great rocket science question. It could just be, describe three things you would take to a desert island if you knew you were going to be stuck there for the rest of your life. It could be a simple question, but it makes us think and makes us prioritize. And so that's helped me even with the horseback riding, because sometimes, even with the greatest horse you're riding, something may go a little kafooey, and you have to instantly on the spot recover and keep moving forward.
As you were speaking, I was looking at the article, and you had mentioned how Cornet Noir, I love that name. Cornet Noir stands for Black Ice Cream Cone. It's also your Toastmaster colleague. And I'm just wondering, do you guys do table topics together?
We have quiet conversations. And a lot of times it's just by touch. Although he does know some German. I mean, he knows a lot of German. Mm. I know two things in German. Nein, which means no. So every once in a while when I'm grooming him, especially his right front foot, if I go to, as I'm working with him, sometimes he'll get a little impatient and he'll want to stomp it a little bit. And I just say, nein, and he'll stop immediately. The other thing I say to him is, bravo, Junge, which means good boy. And he knows what that means. He does.
Yeah. Wow. Deborah, I know a lot of people have pretty deep bonds with their animal friends. And I have the sense, well, not I have the sense.
Horse sense, yeah. Yeah, you do.
For you, Cornet Noir is not only an animal friend, but a partner in your sport. And I think even beyond that, a major figure in your life. I think that we can learn a lot from animals, and I have the suspicion that you've maybe learned a thing or two from Cornet Noir. What have you learned?
To be more aware, that's a good word, of my feelings in relationships with other people, to learn how important it is to communicate effectively. And sometimes that means not through a bunch of mumble-jumble words. Less is more. That's always the way it is with the horse. Oftentimes in life, and I guess maybe I've rambled on a little bit here and there, but I get excited. I love speaking. I do. The other thing that I've learned from him is the extreme importance of being organized in everything that I do as I'm riding him. That means I have to be organized in my rein contact with him. I have to keep my position, my body position, correct form and perfect balance. I have to give these almost imperceivable body leg movement commands to him, aids, that's what they're called, so that he knows what I'm asking him to do. But it also, all of these things apply and bleed over into life with other human beings. Just being aware of how can I inspire and motivate someone else to be more than they think that they can be? How can I take, and this is a quote that I've used, how can I take this little bitty straw of light that I have and use my life and what I'm trying to do to help other people open their eyes to what is possible in their life, to reach for their dreams, to achieve their goals. Because that's what happens when we lose a quest for a dream or a goal in life. I believe part of our spirit starts to die and we just kind of go into a nothingness. I believe this precious gift of life that we've been given should be respected, and that each of us should try our best to live it to the fullest. Noir is my soulmate. He is my partner for life. And while I may have another horse at some point in my life, I will always have Cornette Noir, because this horse has dramatically changed my life. He's given me now a new sense of direction, a new set of goals, a new rejoicing about life. And it's because of this journey that I'm on with him towards something that seems impossible. But nothing is impossible, I believe, when I ride by faith and not by sight.
Wow. I can't actually wait to meet both of you.
I want you to meet us. I do. Can you come down here sometime? Really? You go all over the place, I bet.
It's so funny you say that, Greg, because I was just sitting here right before you said that, picturing myself being at the stable and giving Cornette Noir a hug.
I chop up carrots. You could give him some of those carrots, Devin, right there in his food box. No, I would love it if somehow you, this is wonderful what we're doing now, but if you could come sometime and watch me ride and get to touch this horse and just experience this barn and this lifestyle. This is a lifestyle. This is not a hobby. Somebody said the other day, a hobby. I'm going, this is not a hobby. I have depleted my savings, sold my home. I'm now designated as a professional athlete because I am receiving money, which I need to help pay for this, because this is very, very, very expensive sport. And I am not a wealthy, rich woman, but I have sacrificed everything in my life to be here and to be doing this. That's how much I believe in this. And I have people that are being supportive of what I'm doing. So I invite you to come here sometime. I sure do. I also invite you to please find some places where you can invite me to come and speak, because I would love to share in a official formal motivational presentation that I do with other people, or whether it's through a Zoom or whatever we need to do.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. Well, Deborah, this has been absolutely delightful. And before we go, I would like to perhaps invite you to share how listeners could get a hold of you.
You may pick up the telephone and call me, email me, Deborah@visionbeyondeyesight.org, or check out my website, DeborahMcAlexander.org.
We're certainly going to put links to your article in the Toastmaster magazine. We'll also put links to your site and contact information.
Good. Thank you.
Deborah McAlexander, thank you so much for taking the time to appear on the program today. If we were there in person, we would give both you and Cornette Noir a hug.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg and Ryan.
Thank you, Deborah.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.